Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello, and welcome to an adventure in history. Right off the bat, I want to make sure that you know that we are ending Pledge Week, KMUN, and you can make a donation tonight online or tomorrow or the next day or sign up for recurring donations, but KMUN.org, and it's right at the top of the page, a little red button that says donate.
You know, you can tell how seriously I take fundraising for a nonprofit that needs the public support, because there were a lot of things I was going to jump in there. I was going to make fun of you for saying right off the bat, like, oh, you know, I like baseball and it is spring training. Thank you.
But
and,
you let me say it.
And then you said we're ending Pledge Week. And I was going to say, what? They're not doing Pledge Weeks anymore?
No, oh.
But that would all be false. And it would have taken away from the important message that if you love Alana and kind of like Mac and like the show, you should pledge something.
And all of your other local public radio hosts and co-hosts. And
oh, yeah.
All the other shows, information.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Our warm-up acts that lead into this show all week long.
Yep.
Building up to this moment on the air.
And of course, we love our freedom of speech. And these are public airwaves. And they are public airwaves because this is public radio. So again, KMUN.org. You can donate anything. You can donate right there. And then you can also sign up for monthly pledges as well. So
there's you could write a check.
Yes. Mac loves his checks.
She likes to make fun of me for writing checks. I love writing checks.
Oh, my gosh. Checks. We have Jennifer Crockett here with us. Thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Executive Director of the Liberty Theater. We're glad you're here. Finally.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
It's about time you joined us.
We've asked her for 9 years, and she keeps refusing to come. But now she's agreed.
They keep me locked up at the theater.
I think you kidnapped her and brought her here.
Yes.
No, we can't believe you haven't been on the show before.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We have all the same friends.
I know. We wear the same outfits and show up to the same things.
It is true. Yes. Okay,
so
I've got a word.
The show is cram-packed, so let's get to it.
So this is an adjective, 18th century English,
all right.
A word, a historical word, lost word that's no longer in use. Let's see if this one will come back.
It won't, but go ahead.
Pamphagus.
Pamphagus. Mm-hmm. Spell it.
P-A-M-P-H-A-G-O-U-S. Pamphagus.
Oh, see, I was thrown because you're mispronouncing it. I have no idea how it's pronounced. And it's an adjective.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I am kind of clueless on this one.
Pamphagus.
I believe that is something that's over the top.
Ooh, interesting. Do you have any guesses?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I would go down that alley as well. Okay. Over the top or, confident. Overconfident.
Okay, you guys are both wrong. It's an adjective, so it's eats everything.
Eats everything.
Pamphagus. Teenagers are pamphagus little beasts.
Huh.
They eat everything.
Hmm.
Go.
Not
gonna. Okay,
back.
So not good. It's that one's a tough one.
Yeah.
The bigger ones we don't like to stick with.
Yeah. All right. So the history highlights, so we can get on to the big show. These are things that happen tomorrow, as always. Bar trivia, conversation starters, or if you've just run out of things to talk about with your friends. These are things that happen on March 10th.
Okay.
1831, the French Foreign Legion is established by King Louis Philippe to support his war in Algeria. The French Foreign Legion.
Good.
We have no opinion on that. All right. 1849. Abraham Lincoln, that guy, applies for a patent. He's the only U.S. president to do so for a device to lift a boat over shoals and obstructions.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
Way to go, Lincoln. That just right now, because, my list always changes between him being in the first slot and the second slot for best president ever.
So that bump him up.
Right now, that just bumped him up to one for a while.
Right. A patent.
Yeah.
He's got a patent.
Now I'm curious as to whether he actually came up with the idea.
Yeah.
What are you saying? He stole it from somebody else?
No.
He's honest Abe.
Illinois, right? Was there
exactly. Canals, boats.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay. All right.
Wow. Alana just disparages and
I didn't mean it like that. Sometimes you can come up with a patent, but it is not
right.
your idea.
Sure. Try to take it back. It's too late now. 1864, President Lincoln, 1864, signs Ulysses S. Grant's commission to command the U.S. Army.
Okay.
He's tired of all these guys that aren't getting it done for him. And he's like, will somebody please fight? So he puts Grant in charge. That was almost going to be my history of the day, because I do think that kind of turns the tide in the Civil War.
Okay.
Let's see, 1959, Tibetans revolt against Chinese occupation. Have we talked about the Dalai Lama on the show?
We haven't.
When I was like 12 years old, my father drove me. He was somewhere nearby speaking, and the place was packed, but they'd put speakers out in the parking lot. So I heard him speak when I was like incredibly young. And then my father was like, well, I wanted to see him. And we drove away after 20 minutes. But all right. 1970, Army captain is charged with the My Lai war crimes.
Mm.
Not good. But our history holiday thing, I think, had the most impact on history. 1876, first speech transmitted by telephone. The first discernible speech is transmitted over a telephone system when inventor Alexander Graham Bell summons his assistant in another room by saying, Mr. Watson, come here. I want you. Bell had received a comprehensive telephone patent just 3 days before.
I saw that one.
And you can all insert your own jokes there.
I mean, so. I did think it was kind of funny because, I mean, he had to have known a little bit that this was going to be historic because he did just file the patent.
You would think so.
And then those are the first words telling somebody to come to you.
I want you.
Yeah, I know.
I want you in the room. I want you to come here.
And then obviously it's documented too, because you can always rewrite history a little bit.
That's right. Maybe the call got dropped.
Yeah.
And there was more to it.
But that was it.
All right. There's no good segue.
I know. Well, there's much more interesting words and conversations to be had with our guest, Jennifer Crockett.
How do you top that?
Well, not.
See, I try to figure out some segue, but
yes.
There's no good one.
Well, thanks for coming.
I want you to tell me about the Liberty Theater.
Fantastic.
And I want to hear about her.
I want to hear the background
clarinet
story.
Playing.
I know.
And other musical.
And coming to Astoria, how you found Astoria.
But let's start with where you grew up. Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Pittsburgh originally. Most of my family still lives there.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Yep. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I did not know we had a Pennsylvania connection.
Oh, yeah. Are you from there also?
I went to school there and briefly worked for United States Senator John Hines before he died in a plane crash. And, of course, on the east side of the state, because Pennsylvania could be kind of two states. There's the east and the west. And some people, not me, because I liked Pittsburgh.
Is that the other side?
it's on the western side.
Oh, okay.
Disparage Pittsburgh as Pitt's puke.
Wow.
That's what people in like Philadelphia.
Did you know this?
I did not know this.
Great, Mac.
But Pittsburgh is where John Hines was from and the Hines Corporation. Yeah, yeah. So I like Pittsburgh. And I actually spent a summer working at Laurel Hill State Park, just like an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I come from a long line of U.S. steel workers and Joy Tool Company workers, so even predating U.S. steel. So my family goes back to about 1747.
The steel industry.
Yeah, up in Franklin, Pennsylvania. And then everybody has sort of made their way down to Pittsburgh at this point.
But it's very pretty country.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so tell us about growing up in Pittsburgh. What were your interests? Were you interested in music back then and the arts?
Yeah, by that point, my parents had moved us to the Chicago area. And so I started playing clarinet at age 10, which I have no, I mean, seeing a 10-year-old now, I have no idea what I was able to actually do at 10. And then basically went to public school music programs and then went on to, I studied at DePaul University and then made my way out to Oregon. I visited, one of my college roommates was from Oregon. And I came out to Portland and was like, oh, my God, trees and
hills.
Never looked back.
So why the clarinet?
I really wanted to play cello. and it was huge. And my mom had played clarinet and my grandmother had played clarinet. And they were like, here's this clarinet. And then there we go. But I fell in love with it. Probably, I think I was in middle school, hearing Chicago Symphony play the Nutcracker Suite and the clarinet solo and Waltz of the Flowers that had me from that point.
And you played in the Nutcracker this year? Or how many years have you done that here?
I've done that here, I think. I've lived here 10 years, and I think I've done it about 9 years. And it's an amazing, I mean, it's Maddox and Little Ballet Dance Studio, as everybody knows. It's one of the last, if not the last, full orchestra production of the Nutcracker in the Pacific Northwest.
It's everybody the only else, one.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Everybody else does a reduced orchestra. So it's really a wonderful experience to play in that.
Yes, I remember seeing her there.
So talk briefly about you obviously have this family encouraging you on clarinet and encouraging music. You enjoy it. Talk about the music education in middle school and high school. And how do you feel about that? And now, what were your teachers like?
I was really lucky. In my era and in my states, music education was very highly funded. Illinois in particular is one of the most highly funded music program states. So my high school, you know, had a music wing. We had all of the different varieties of bands and orchestras available. I was always in musical theater and marching band. I had some really talented and motivating teachers. I definitely grew up with musical privilege. I had a straight shot into college. I had my scholarship lined up at DePaul by the time I was even a junior in high school. I don't think students, or at least many students, get that same opportunity these days. I know teachers really struggle with funding and availability of teachers even. But despite that, you know, what they're able to accomplish in our local schools is amazing. Astoria Schools, Seaside, Warrenton, Ilwaco, Napa even, we've worked with a lot of them at the Liberty, and it's really inspiring to see these huge music programs in these small rural areas is really awesome to see.
I love that how you said that, just, you know, because music is a part of education, right? Mm-hmm. But we can't test for it. And that's where funding comes from, and that's where academics are sort of laid out. And have you seen that shift too from urban to rural, and how that affects sort of what music they're hearing or what sort of access they're getting? Or are you seeing that they really are reaching out to the Liberty and to the right resources to make it a bigger and broader program?
Yeah. You know, I think kids that grow up in urban environments, definitely, you know, you have a symphony very close by. You've got these huge opulent venues very close by. You've got universities close by. Our rural programs maybe don't have the same access to that. But what they're able to accomplish and the resources that they are making happen is pretty incredible. The Music Conservatory, the Astoria Conservatory of Music and Astoria Ballet are doing a production for kids, by kids, this spring at the Liberty. So they're creating things that I think maybe don't get created grassroots style in urban environments, but you do see in rural areas.
Interesting. And when you were going from high school to DePaul, what did you think your life was going to be after college?
Oh man, I 100% expected to be a performer in a symphony orchestra. That was the only thing I was interested in. That was my career path. And holy cow, you get out of college and you realize at the time when I graduated, it was a less than 3% chance of a placement in a symphony orchestra. I could have picked up the shot put and had a better chance of making an Olympic team. Just, you know, in woodwind instruments, there's usually only two, or there's some auxiliary players, 2 to 4 in an orchestra. In the mid-90s, it was at a point where orchestras were losing their funding. Arts administration never, ever came across my radar. I was lucky enough to take a music business class at DePaul, and it was a brand new class. Everybody was talking about music business and how to read contracts. And it was not a minor or a major or anything like that. So arts administration didn't come across my radar until much later in life, which is too bad. I often wonder, where would I be if I had gone down that path earlier?
So do any of your professors or any counselors that you're in contact with as you're going through your college career, is there talk of that 3%?
No.
I mean, is there any any stopping and saying, hey, this is what this degree will actually do for you or not do for you?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, DePaul was a conservatory, so we had a jury system. And so basically at the end of every year, you auditioned to be able to come back. So, you know, we started out as a class of, I think, 12 clarinetists. And then by the time I graduated, that we were down to two. And so, and that was pretty regular. So definitely in a conservatory environment, you're aware of how competitive it is. Larger schools, maybe not. I have taught clarinet to middle schoolers and high schoolers. And as a teacher, we've always had that conversation of, you know, for every one person sitting on that stage playing, there's a whole array of people making that happen. There are fundraisers, there are event planners, there are operations managers, stagehands, lighting design, technical, everything. So I often encourage students, you know, stick with clarinet. It's a great skill to have. It's pretty cool to be able to like read another language fluently that a lot of people don't know. But really encouraging students to think broadly about it.
Because that jumped out and resonated with me when you said 3%, because I was a double major, history and political science. Political science was going to be the career. History was just, I was taking so many classes, it was fun. I might as well double major.
Yeah.
None of those history professors, all very nice people, but throughout my college career, none of them said, this is what this degree is good for. It was always, well, you can go on and get a PhD and teach, or it's a good base for being a lawyer.
Yeah.
There was
yeah.
never like, why even have this history degree then?
Yeah.
And when you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, how what, almost criminal to be giving a degree with no future.
Oh,
only three
absolutely.
Out of 100 of you will have a paying gig with this in theory.
Well, and I think that's why you see so many music majors that go on to law school or med school. I mean, just about every doctor or lawyer I know played an instrument as a young person. So there's definitely a skill set and there are things that are valuable to learn, but oftentimes it's applied in other fields.
So we jumped to getting to Oregon, but you finished school, you've got this degree, you're applying to symphonies, I assume?
Yeah, I did a lot of auditions. I sent my mother back my clarinets after an audition and said, I never want to see these ever again. Put them in the closet. I know.
Very terrible.
Very dramatic. And I didn't play for about 10 years. I didn't play at all. And I moved to Portland and I would tell people that I went to school for something else. I couldn't even talk about it.
Oh, wow.
So it was interesting. A friend of mine won the Oregon Symphony audition as the second clarinetist and moved to Portland and basically outed me. Oh. Did you guys know that Jen played clarinet and majored in clarinet? And so I had my mom send my clarinets back to me and I started playing again, and it was kind of perfect in my life. My friend was a practicing Buddhist at the time, and I started kind of taking lessons with him, getting back in, and his approach to playing was exactly the opposite of conservatory, where it's perfect, perfect, perfect. You're practicing things 20, 30 times perfectly in a row. His was very just move air through this instrument. Feel the vibration, feel how this sounds, and don't attach any sort of feelings to what is coming out of it. So it just removes all of the, I had a lot of shame behind my playing from, you know, you spend your entire life wanting this thing that you did not succeed at. And that was perfect for me. And I was able to, I mean, I'm incapable of enjoying anything as a hobby. So of course I jumped back into professional playing. But it's made me, you know, I subbed with Oregon Symphony again last weekend. I don't get nervous. I do not attach negative feelings to my playing. I feel very lucky that I can sit on a stage in a high pressure situation and just be like, I have prepared as much as I possibly can. And whatever comes out at this moment is I can let go of. And yeah, so it took a lot of time and effort to get there, but I'm very fortunate that I
love it.
Wow.
And that's art, right? That is what art is supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to bring you in, though, like in the freshman year for music tracks. It's like to tell your story.
Oh, totally.
I mean, be prepared, and this is what can happen, and this is find the good in this.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I still do. From time to time, Jesse or one of the other teachers will bring me in for master classes at the local schools. And every once in a while, I have some time to take on a student. But that's my philosophy to teaching as well. It's just. Man, just enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, who knows where it will lead you? Who cares right now? And just enjoy it.
So what jobs were you doing? And you even mentioned teaching. So when you were in Portland and you just started dabbling back into music, at that point, were you in a career yet or were you job searching?
After I let go of clarinet, I had worked at The Gap and Urban Outfitters in college. And then I got a job at Anthropology, which is under the Urban Outfitters umbrella. I kind of worked my way up from being a cashier to a district manager at one point. And so I followed that job out to the West Coast. And so it was back in a time of retail where these corporations would basically give you a store. And so I just had markers I had to hit, but how I hit them was up to me. And then at one point I had joined kind of a triage team for Anthropology, where we would go to failing stores and get them up to industry markers. And so when I started at the Liberty, I approached it kind of the same way. How do we get this theater that's not hitting industry markers? How do we fix that?
So what was the number one on the list?
The first thing I did, I went to a conference my very first year for the League of Historic American Theaters, and I now sit on their board. And I went to a workshop called What to Do with Extra Cash, and I went out in the hallway. I was like, we can't even pay me. I mean, it's like the accountant had called that morning. Things were not going well. And so I brought out a consultant back to Astoria with me from Shuler Shook, and they're theatrical planners. And he and I crawled through every inch of that theater, and they came up with basically a 60-point checklist of all the things prioritized we could do to get the theater up to industry standard. And to this day, we're still working through that list. So the main thing was, the number one thing was, you don't look like you're open even when you're open. You remember our vestibule before the glass was put in, and we updated all the lighting and brightened up the paint and brought in some poster boxes. The staff and I would be standing in the vestibule, and people would walk by and say, gosh, I wonder if this theater ever does anything. And we're like, there's literally a show on the stage right now.
Oh.
So that was the first thing on
so
the list.
So you fixed that one.
Yes. Fixed that one. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's an important message, because I think for a lot of interested bystanders that, you know, maybe go to a show a year or a few shows a year, and they know that it's there, they like it. But I think a lot of people would probably just say, well, have more events, have more shows.
Yeah.
If you're short of money. I mean, I think they don't think about the bigger picture of those 60 items. And,
oh, yeah.
And maybe you need a better sound system. Maybe you need curtains. Maybe you need a better green room. Maybe there's all this list
of things.
Cost
of bringing out a show.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know. Well, and I mean, in the venue industry, tickets often only cover 30 to 40% of your overhead for the show. So it's sponsorships, it's individual donations, it's all these other things that concession sales that really, truly pay for the show. But for us, it was customer experience, and that visibility was part of it. Lots of listeners may remember our old box office where they had to stand in the rain on 12th Street and go in one at a time to get their tickets.
Yes.
Not having a concession stand, so we had to sell drinks out of bus tubs with a 32-minute wait.
Oh.
Yeah. It turns out your audiences don't love that. So it was a lot of things like that at first for us.
And now you have two concessions. I mean, the one downstairs is gorgeous, but you added one upstairs, or you do.
Yeah, for bigger shows, we'll put one up on the balcony too.
And year-round programming.
Yep.
That had to have been huge. And was that on the list?
Absolutely. Okay. We went from, I think it was about 26 public shows a year when I started to, more than 100, sometimes up to 120 a year now. And that doesn't include all of our Kids Make Theater classes and weddings and banquets and things. But yeah, just being open. We'll try anything once.
Yeah. Well, and the Kids Make Theater is, I mean, it's been great. I mean, my family loves it. I've brought this up before. We were on the blacklisted.
Yes.
And I had to email Jennifer to get off the blacklist list. Like, I didn't know. You don't even remember. I'm glad you don't remember. But that program, I mean, is accessible and affordable. Mm-hmm. And how huge is that program to bringing in a different age of people into the theater?
Oh my gosh, it's huge. I mean, we have a donor that subsidizes the majority of the registration fee, so it's helped us remove barriers to the classes. We went from about 30 kids when we first opened, and then that gift has made it so, you know, we've got more than 400 kids coming through our hallways every week.
And age
3.5 to 18. Yeah. And then we do workshops and things for adults from time to time. But yeah, it's a whole new audience. It's the next generation of audiences and staff. I mean, these kids are getting lighting and sound training. We need that all the time at the theater. So
I want to make sure we have enough time. If somebody wants to donate, how do they find you? Or if they want to talk to you about something, how do they track you down?
LibertyAstoria.org is the best way.
You can make donations right online there as well.
Yeah. LibertyAstoria.org/donate.
Yeah. Or a check. They'll take your check, Mac.
Yeah, you can give a check.
I know that.
Mac, you do know that.
So two questions before we run out of time as well. I assume, of course, your favorite instrument is the clarinet.
I'm still really partial to cello. Yeah.
Are you really?
Do you play it at all?
I don't at all. I do play bass clarinet. I'm an auxiliary clarinetist, and I love playing bass because it is pretty much the same range as a cello.
Oh, okay.
And then what is your favorite piece of music that you either play or have heard?
Well, this last weekend with Oregon Symphony, we did the Amadeus soundtrack, and Mozart's Grand Partita is one of my favorites to play and listen to.
I love that.
Okay, and you're not allowed to say Kids Make Theater. You've been the executive director of Liberty Theater for 9 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is your favorite show that's ever been on the stage in that 9 years?
Oh, gosh. Stunt Dogs, I think, was my favorite because it was just so wild.
Not the bald guy?
How fun.
They're all great. They're all great. We've got one tonight. You should.
Okay. They're all great. We know that. Yeah. But you're sticking with the dogs.
Yeah. The dogs were pretty funny.
Okay. And if money were not the issue... Mm-hmm. Somebody, you can't say, like, I want the real Beatles to show up. Mm-hmm. So anybody who is out there performing right now, what show would you want on the stage? If you could just snap your fingers and make
it happen. The show that just broke my heart 2 days ago with a one-line turn down was James Taylor. I really wanted James Taylor, and I got the, he does not play venues your size.
Oh,
period.
Oh, man.
I have tried.
We don't need him.
Well,
fine then.
Shame on him.
Keep asking. We don't play venues that size for that price. Is that also?
We didn't even talk numbers.
Oh.
He's apparently only doing amphitheaters right now.
Oh,
so.
Oh, how fun.
Amphitheater. Yeah. Do you think that's because of the size or because
it's got to be the
acoustics
size.
Or something?
Who knows? I don't know.
So what is going to keep you here, Jennifer?
In Astoria?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I am a rainy weather person, so I think that's going to keep us here. I am a historic house buff. My husband's a contractor and likes working on historic places. I think that's going to keep us here. There's so many wonderful things about this area. I'm sold.
Well, I love it. Well, great. We're so glad you're here. Thank you for coming on our show finally. And thank you for continuing to bring the arts to this community and to all ages. I mean, that access is important. So we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And the tagline for Liberty Theater, the
Heart of Astoria. Oh my gosh, I blanked when you looked at me.
I know. I saw the look of panic. I thought I was throwing you a softball there. All right. Go make some history. Go catch a show at the Liberty, and we will catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.